This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. 877-217-5757 is your number. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow producing, and we begin the show today with a discussion about what's happening in the world of collegiate athletics. That world has been turned upside down with NIL and transfer portal, and now college coaches have had to adjust. And the most famous coach of all, the arguably most successful LSU coach of all time, even though he was only here 5 years, he took a program that had had 8 losing seasons in 11 years, and ultimately, and within 4 years, they won the national championship. His name is Nick Lou Saban, and he won 7 national titles total and retired a few months ago at the age of 72 years old. And he went before Congress on March 12th, just 16 days ago. And Nick Saban told members of Congress that the primary reason for his departure at the tender age of 72 was because the world had changed and he didn't like it. Here's Coach Saban.
All the things that we worked so hard to improve on, we're going to start seeing slide in the wrong direction because we've created an environment that really does not promote personal development or that is going to create success for their future.
You know, one question I have to ask. You just retired from an amazingly and historically significant coaching career. How much did the current chaos and state of the law contribute to your decision to retire now?
Well, all the things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. So it's always was about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life. My wife even said to me, we'd have all the recruits over on Sunday with their parents for breakfast, and she would always meet with the mothers and talk about how she was going to help and impact their sons and how they would be well taken care of. And she came to me, you know, like right before I retired and said, why are we doing this? And I said, what do you mean? She said, all they care about is how much you're going to pay them. They don't care about how you're going to develop them, which is all what we've always done. So why are we doing this? So, you know, to me, that was sort of a red alert that we really are creating a circumstance here that is not beneficial to the development of young people. And that's the reason that I always like college athletics more than the NFL, is because you had the opportunity to develop young people. So, and I want their quality of life to be good. I think, as I said before, name, image, and likeness is a great opportunity for them to create a brand for themselves. I'm not against that at all. But to come up with some kind of a system that still can help the development of young people, I think, is paramount to the future of college athletics.
That was Nick Saban. Actually, a good question from Ted Cruz, of all people, senator from Texas. But Saban, much maligned in Louisiana for leaving LSU at the end of the 2005 season and then going off to Miami for 2 years as coach of the Dolphins and then going to Alabama, where he won 6 national titles at the expense of LSU. But he is a giant, and when he talks, people listen. And when he was at LSU, before he became the Nick Saban that people either loved or loathed, he contributed heavily to the development of the infrastructure there. His name is on the building of the Athletic Center, which used to be the old Jim Armory, because of the Academic Center for Athletes, because he contributed to the program. And when you look at the names on that building, there aren't many LSU executives of any kind on the building, their names, other than Nick Saban. Tommy Karam is also on there, a fine man who's worked many years at Louisiana State University. Darryl Glasper is with us. He attended Southern University, is a Hall of Famer for his heroics on the bluff. And he, of course, is a man, and we've talked to about many matters through the years. At the age of 70, he's still almost a scratch golfer. He was a track star who ran a 9600 in his day, and he played very well And that's an understatement for Carl Emerson Stewart's Jaguars back in the day. Good morning, Daryl Glasper.
Hey, Jim. Good morning. How you doing? And to your listeners.
Fine. What's your take on where we are right now?
Well, the state of collegiate, I'm going to use the word collegiate sports, that don't exist anymore. Name, image, and likeness took it from a collegiate sport to a professional sport. They're all professionals. When you're receiving that kind of money, this was talked about 40 years ago. Two of the greatest coaches of college football, one being Nick Saban 16 days ago, talked to Congress. But it was 40 years ago that a coach named Eddie Robinson went before Congress and told them that the tail was going to wag the dog. And so happened now that it is coming to fruition. We don't have what we have in the past was college athletics. It was developing young men to go and to make a living and to live a decent life. Now it's young men and young women, and they're being paid. And you have a cocktail. You have a cocktail of not going to class because you're so popular, you can't go to class. You got to go online. They're living in apartments, so they're not living in dormitories like we did in the 70s and all together, knowing where we are. We, you know, can help one another and be with one another and around one another. They're all scattered. And then you have the proliferation of gambling, and now they're gambling on themselves. Jim, you have what they call a total mess. Now, the people who can fix it is going to have to be those at the top of it, and it's the NCAA who is very complicit. They knew because they were told by those inside. I sent you a copy of the article many weeks ago that it's going to be very fast and furious, the downfall of collegiate sports.
How does this affect historically black colleges and universities?
Oh, Eddie Robinson said it 40 years ago. You start off by the big TV contracts. Look, if you want to believe it or not, that when you had the historical African-American athletes at historical black colleges in the late 60s and the 70s, all the pro scouts visit. That was their number one stop. Oh, at the Grambling, the Southern, to Jackson State, and to other universities around the country. It was the number one stop. Today, they're not even inviting individuals. They don't even go to their camps because the talent pool is not in those universities anymore. But then, too, you have the disparity, and corporations are not giving individuals at historical black colleges NIL contracts. It's just the nature of the business. You have all of the very successful business people around the country. They're not reinvesting back in it. So it's not a collegiate sport anymore, unless there is something at the end of the day for them. Now, I like to say this. In the past, when you had the best interest of the collegiate athlete, it was the president being the president of a university that had the best academic values for the athletes. And we will always meet with the president. He will tell you, I'm here for the academic part. Now they're friends with all the coaches. They're going golfing with them and hunting with them and shooting and all kind of things with them. And so they become their friends. So they don't hold anybody accountable. Then you have the board of directors, supervisors, administrators, whoever those individuals are that make decisions for the university, now are being dictated to the coaches and to the athletic directors saying, hey, I need a bigger facility. You have a TV contract. You have 10,000 seats. The number three stadiums in this country is one, the Horseshoe, which is Ohio State. The next one is the House, Michigan. That's 100-some thousand. And you know who's number one? Right here in Louisiana. That's according to the experts, is Tiger Stadium, Death Valley. It is one of the best atmospheres that you could ever be in college, which we know then as college sports. So, Jim, I just think that Nick Saban echoed what Eddie Robinson said 40 years ago. That door is so cracked wide open right now, only Congress is going to be able to fix it. It's going to have to implement laws that said, hey, you are a collegiate university. Of course, athletes want a piece of the pie. They're the ones out there.
Well, you're on a roll, but the genie's out of the bottle. And players for years, I think, were used and sometimes abused. And it's great that they're being paid. I'm with Saban, and I don't think he was necessarily criticizing that. In fact, he said he was okay with NIL. He doesn't like the transfer portal. And he made the statement, his appearance before that committee was in a joint committee. It was longer than, of course, we played. But he said every time a player transfers, the percentages of graduating go down by 20%. So it's all about money now. And for an 18 to 22-year-old kid, I don't know if they're fully able to absorb and comprehend that. But we'll talk more about it with Darryl Glasper. And where do we go from here? And how does this affect LSU and Southern and other universities? It is a new world in which we live. 877-217-5757. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Darryl Glasper, Southern University Hall of Famer, great basketball and track star, and in later life, golfer. He is a man who is obviously gifted in many ways when it comes to the games people play. And as we know, he's also been a major stalwart in other areas politically. He was elected to the Metro Council when he was barely out of his 20s. And here he is today with us talking about the new world of collegiate athletics. And now on college campuses like LSU, the major emphasis is on the athletic program. The LSU library is crumbling, but yet there's talk of building a $500 million arena for basketball. And the arena now is in need of a facelift, but do we need to spend $500 million for a new arena? No, but it's something that is designed to attract attention and perhaps generate revenue from other sources, and maybe people will come. If you build it, will they come? I don't know, but right now they're not filling the arena they have. What do you think? 877-217-5757. And will all a good question from a listener, Darryl, will all this money that now goes to athletes from corporate entities, that's money in the old days that would have gone to athletic departments. How will that change the world as we know it?
Well, it has changed the world dramatically simply because the university is the focal point. The university is bigger than athletes. That money used to go to the athletics departments and go to the endowments and for scholarships for more than just athletes, but to the university at all, you know, as a whole. Jim, I want to discuss something that the transport portal. I was sitting at a basketball game, and I said this, and it, some people got mad, maybe on both sides, both black and white, but it's the truth. During integration, when we first integrated sports in this town, and sports integrated around the nation, and where kids had an opportunity to open up to go to schools, it discriminated. Now, when I said discriminated, remember what I'm using the word discrimination, because coaches stopped looking at white athletes at that point and started saying, oh, I see that these athletes can come here now, so I'm going after the what we consider the best athletes in certain sports, not in baseball, maybe in swimming and other areas, but and I'm talking about something I know about. Because coaches started calling, hey, man, what about this kid, that kid? Wait, what about the kid at Lehigh? What about the kid at Calicat? What about the kid at Struma? So 50%, and just look at these numbers, 50% of white athletes was taken off the table. When you created the transport portal, Deion Sanders said it best. It's like it's the draft for high school students and then free agency. Because now a kid didn't go to North Carolina, but he went to Southeastern. He's now all first team, all Southeastern Conference. He developed. We know he made the transition from high school to college. So guess what? He jumps in the portal. But he jumped in the portal after he took a big NIL contract from the people in Louisiana. And now he can go to North Carolina or to Duke, wherever he wants to go. There has to be some rules and regulations put in effect. You know what the transfer portal has done for high school students? It has taken another 30%. So a white kid now that have his dreams and aspirations, and I was sitting right next to one of them father, and we were just talking about the game. I went to go see a big kid, 7'1" kid play, and don't normally go to him, but I wanted to see him. Try to ask him to throw the sky hook. Jim, athletics as we know it, or knew it, is no longer in existence. The buildings are getting bigger. The money is getting larger. The betting is getting, it's all sports betting. It's all out of control. And we're looking for, you have to look for Congress to put it back into alignment.
Well, and there is the capacity for all kinds of chicanery. In the old days, of course, what Will Wade did at LSU was illegal and got him a ticket out of Tigertown. But now he could do this with impunity, and he's done very well at McNeese State. And people are still engaged, but how long will this last? How long will sports have this appeal that it has now as an escape in which a lot of people in not very good shape live vicariously through athletes who are much better conditioned and do things that most of us can't do? If you'd like to get under the wire with Daryl, 877-217-5757. Or talk at talklouisiana.org. Here's a good question from Tom on Bluebonnet, and it's one that has been discussed with now these athletes being all but employees at universities. Will workers' comp kick in? Will athletic departments and universities be responsible for injuries that are received by their competitors? What do you think, Daryl?
Well, Jim, if you're an employee, you have to have rights. And then come union. Next, gonna come unionized organizations. Look, let me tell you this: when we played sports because there was a desire to become a better athlete, a better person, and have dreams and aspirations. Today, you take the dream off the table when you give them $5 million. When you don't have to go to class, there's no incentive in trying to become a businessman, a doctor, a lawyer, anything else. It is how much money I'm gonna get. Nick Saban was right, but I want to go back. Will Wade was punished for something that was already occurring under the table.
No doubt about
Make myself very clear. Will Wade was punished for something that everybody knew, including the NCAA, knew that these things was going on. Look, in order to get kind of corral the wild horses now, Congress is going to have to implement rules where there is a from top to bottom, and it all starts at the top. It starts with the administrators and the directors of the universities around the country, and that is to put some language in place that if you sign an NIL contract and you want to leave, then what kind of compensation do we get? It happens in contracts every day. Also, where we talk about all of these facilities, you know, Jim, I would be very, very hesitant right now to invest in any type of facility because you don't know what direction sports are going in. We don't know what's going in. I can tell you that according to that article, it's going to be fast and furious. That's by sports writers. That's not by Daryl. I can only tell you what it used to be. And what really disgusts me about it, and I don't watch it a lot, is the fact that there's no team concept anymore. We're not playing for one another with one another, for the betterment of one another, and better for the betterment of the team. You have TikTok, you have the Facebook, you have all of the social media outlets, and then they have to be on there. They stand out, and I mean, you know who the athletes are. You see them on TikTok all the time. They are promoting themselves to make more and more money and not to get a good education to go to live a good life. But we'll see in the next 6 months, because Nick Saban has spoken. Eddie Robinson, when he spoke, being an African-American, he was on the money. He hit it on the head. He said, you cracked the door here, but the door is going to be thrown wide open where you're going to be buying athletes. Go look at it. Everybody Google Eddie Robinson. And I think it was 1984, if I'm not mistaken, when his address to Congress. Nick Saban, 16 days ago, because he won 7 championships, and he's a household name, now everybody's starting to listen.
Well, Daryl, we always enjoy your insights. Appreciate your comments today, and let's keep in touch. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thank you so much, brother.
And as we round the corner and head for the break, halfway through the hour, Mark Ballard in the second half. A few days ago, it was the 80th birthday of Diana Ross. I noted that she had 11 number ones with the Supremes, and folks asked which ones were number one. Well, Where Did Our Love Go? Baby Love. Come See About Me. Stop in the Name of Love. Back in My Arms Again. I Hear a Symphony. Can't Hurry Love. You Keep Me Hanging On. Love Is Here. Now You're Gone. The Happening. And the last one was last two. Love Child. And the last one was Someday We'll Be Together from Diana Ross and the Supremes. I did misplay a song. It was my choice. Robin played it, but their last top 10, the Supremes, was Stone Love, but that was not Diana Ross singing. That was Jeannie Turrell, the sister of the boxer Ernie Turrell, who replaced Diana. Sounded a lot like her, but Diana left quite a mark. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard is with us, the man who covers the Capitol, as in the nation's capital now, for The Advocate and The Picayune, the newspapers of record in Louisiana. And for years, he covered the state capitol, and we will probably touch base with him about what's happening here and there. And in Washington, last week, since we last joined Mark, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the firebrand from Georgia, a conservative of note, made a move to oust Mike Johnson, her fellow conservative of note, the Speaker of the House from Benton, Louisiana. She didn't like the fact that he's been cutting deals with Democrats. And Mark Ballard, do you think this is going anywhere?
Well, right now, not necessarily so. She basically handed in the one-page resolution during the debate over the $1.2 trillion funding measure that the conservatives really disliked. And in fact, most Republicans voted against it. But since then, she's going to have to, it's called certification. And when they get back next week to the Capitol, you know, she will then have to have it certified. And if she does do the certification on it, then there'll be a vote within 48 hours. A lot of Republicans are kind of balking at this because they're kind of afraid of, you know, after all the dysfunction that went on after McCarthy was ousted. They don't want to revisit that in an election year. So that's kind of up in the air. However, Johnson, who does not address this directly, says that he's spending his 2 weeks putting together packages that that the conservatives will like, including Ukraine funding, which could be where the rubber hits the road on this. The conservatives have said that if he brings a Ukraine funding bill that they don't like, which would be the one that the Senate passed, that he could very well be put up for a no confidence vote. So, I mean, this is all very possible. It's all very fluid right now. So, but the conservatives spent an awful lot of time since that vote on national television saying how dissatisfied they are with Mike Johnson. So there it stands.
Well, he is not playing a real strong hand because the Republican majority is the scantest of majorities. And there are enough people on the far right who are even farther right than Mike Johnson who are potentially capable of giving him the same trouble they gave Kevin McCarthy, who not only was ousted as Speaker, but just took his marbles and went home to Bakersfield. Mike Johnson is there. The LSU graduate, both undergraduate and law school, was seated behind the president when Joe Biden gave his State of the Union address, and we'll see where it goes. But you wrote in your column last week about Roman Rybchenko's trip to Washington, a frequent guest on our show, to make the plea for funding to Ukraine. And I heard last night on a national program on this station, The Daily, that Mike Johnson may be swayed by those who are pleading for aid to Ukraine. But you're saying that if he is swayed, he may be giving up his job potentially, if he ends up saying, look, this is something that has to be done.
This is very true. The hard right, the MAGA Republicans, if you will, of which he is one of them, by the way. I mean, you know, he's far more conservative than McCarthy was. But he also now, as the leader, has to, you know, get things done. And so he's in a kind of an uncomfortable position there. But the MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump are very much against giving further aid to Ukraine, particularly the way that it was put together by the Senate and passed by 70 votes in the Senate. And so that seems to be where it is. He's trying to find a package of bills that he can, you know, will deal with the border security, and then at the same time have other bills that would basically give money to Israel, and then do something that has to do with the Ukraine funding. And what he's looking at, I think, is sort of a lend-lease idea, in which the U.S. will send military equipment to the Ukraine or to Ukraine, and then they will have to repay it back at some point, maybe, you know. And that, if he can pull that one off, then maybe he's safe from his conservative Republican clique.
It is curious that Russia is not even close to being in the top 10 of national GDP for countries. The U.S. is first, China is second, Germany is third, and Japan is fourth, and Canada is number 10, but Canada has the second best per capita GDP to the U.S. So we're a rich country, relatively speaking, and Russia is not, relatively speaking, and yet because of their nuclear arsenal primarily, they're able to throw their weight around, and they're wreaking havoc on the rest of the world with this war in Ukraine. And it is amazing that there is not more pushback to Vladimir Putin in some quarters. In fact, there has actually been support for Putin in some quarters in this government. Now, I'll give our U.S. senators credit, Bill Cassidy and John Kennedy. They voted for aid to Ukraine, but they were in a minority in their own party, Mark. So that shows you the kind of pushback that potentially Mike Johnson could get, because Clay Higgins voted against aid to Ukraine, as did Mike Johnson when he was a backbencher. Garrett Graves has voted against aid to Ukraine. It's not something that has been popular.
It has not, but again, that's just with a faction of the Republican Party that is against that. There's a large number of Republicans who do want to see the U.S. Support the Ukraine and to oppose Putin's efforts to try to recreate the Soviet Empire, if you will, under his tutelage. And he's successful with this in that Ukraine does not have enough money, I mean, in the pipeline now, and is starting to lose some of these battles, and that seems to have a lot of concern among Democrats as well as many Republicans as well.
Again, your number for Mark Ballard, 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Mark.
Yesterday, there was a special election held in Alabama for a state representative position. The incumbent state rep, a Republican, resigned because of voter fraud. The lady who won the election was a Democrat, Marilyn Land. She was heavily won in the landslide by 25 percentage points. She totally supported a woman's right to choose. Her Republican opponent was opposed to a woman's right to choose, and he lost in a district that went big time for Trump in 2020. Now, my question for Mr. Ballard is, could this be a canary in the coal mine for the election on November 5th?
All right. This is a red state. And David is right. This was a Republican seat. It went to a Democrat who supports abortion rights, and it is in the Southeastern Conference. Does this mean that these red states like Alabama and Louisiana are in play? I would say no. I think they're in play in some districts, but not for the overall state votes. But your thoughts, Mark?
Well, I kind of agree with you on that. But what he's right that it is a canary in the coal mine on this, that it seems like every time the abortion issue comes up, the right to access comes up in conservative states, that they tend to the right to access tends to win out. And that was the case in Alabama with that state representative race that he's describing. Mm-hmm. Basically, the infertile, oh God, forgive me for my mispronunciations, but inverto fertilization issue in Alabama. Did that come close?
It's close enough.
Okay, was an issue in that particular race, and what we saw was that, at least in that district, that people voted against the stance on the that the Alabama Supreme Court took on IVF.
And Republicans still hold a 75-27 advantage over Democrats in the Alabama House. So this election is an eye-opener, but it'll be a long time coming before Democrats rule the South again, if they ever will, as they did not so long ago. But as we know, Mark, many of these Democrats in the old days, they voted like Republicans.
They do, and I think that the South has always been conservative. Even when the Democrats were in charge, they were, you know, conservative Democrats, and that has shifted really since Richard Nixon. That has they have shifted more to the Republican Party, and it's now a solid Republican South. So the Democrats are hoping that this kind of abortion access issue is determinative on the national scale.
877-217-5757 is your number. We're going to take a break here shortly. Mark Ballard with us, as he is on most Thursdays, and we will segue to some state issues that have national relevance. The story today, front page, over objections from union leaders, a bill to limit how public sector unions gather membership fees cleared a Senate committee, advancing a key plank of Republican efforts targeting labor unions' already limited power at the Capitol. Story from James Finn of the Advocate. Senate Bill 331 would bar those unions, including teacher, firefighter, police, and city employee groups, from collecting dues through payroll deductions, an option that many public sector employees offer for workers to pay insurance premiums, bonds, and other costs, including union fees. And we'll talk more about this and the move, of course, against vaccines at the Capitol, too. And the conservatives are ruling. We'll talk about it. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and we'll take a few calls for Mark Ballard as we round the corner and head for home in the final 15 minutes. Lightning round with Mark Ballard, 877-217-5757. One line open if you'd like to grab it. And let's go to Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on.
Hey, you were talking about Dixie Democrats and how they're pretty much Republican now. I would venture to say that anyone that was voting Dixie Democrat before Nixon is probably dead by now. I don't think they're Republicans today. But let me get to my question, and that is about, and maybe y'all could answer it because y'all are in the media. NBC fired Rona McDaniel simply because she got a viewpoint, a Republican viewpoint, and she said something about maybe that the election was rigged.
Well, that wasn't maybe. She said it was rigged, and of course it was not rigged, Patrick. And journalists deal in facts; they don't deal in conjecture.
I agree with you. I agree. Maybe it wasn't rigged, but a point I'm getting at is that NBC literally fired this lady after just 2 days of being on the air. What is it with you can't hear another point of view, even if you can prove that it's a wrong point of view? I mean, you brought up conspiracy theories about JFK. There's no evidence to prove that, but we still get to hear them.
Well, there is evidence on both sides of that issue. There is zero evidence that the election was rigged, other than Donald Trump saying it was and people like Ronna McDaniel parroting him. And to have this as a person, as a commentator, who supposedly is an arbiter of fairness and accuracy, I think would betray the mission of any news organization. And NBC is a pretty big news organization, Patrick.
the thing is, you can't even bring up a different viewpoint that is against
the left. Sure you can.
No, you can't. That would mean they would be fired. Look, Fox News brings people from the left all the time to debate.
Do they have people from the left working for them? And people from the left would
be... Juan Williams for several years, Combs with Hannity and Combs.
Okay, well, Combs is dead. And I don't know if Juan Williams is still there. I haven't seen him in a while. So there aren't many over there. And neither one of those people ever said the election was rigged. And by the way, the 2000 election is the one that was the most contested, and justifiably so. The U.S. Supreme Court voted 4-3 to make George Bush president. Otherwise, Albert Gore would have been the president of the United States. So, Mark, NBC, I don't think the question is whether they made the right call in firing her. They made the wrong call in hiring Ronna McDaniel.
Well, I think that what really came about was that Ronna McDaniel, as the RNC chair, basically trashed personally a number of not just NBC reporters and hosts, but other reporters as well. And did it on a personal, vindictive level, and I think that that was hard for them, for the staff, to overcome. You know, wait, you're hiring this woman that has spent so much time saying that we're a bunch of liars, and they, there was kind of a mini rebellion on that, and I think that's what led NBC to drop her. I mean, in many ways, Patrick is right, is that the NBC had been trying to bring on more conservative Republicans to give an alternative.
Well, and they should. And you're right. Patrick has a point there that MSNBC in particular has almost no contrary point of view. And somebody like Quinn Hillier, who's on this show, who's a national figure, would be a good addition. He's a person who is extremely conservative, but he, at the same time, he calls it as it is, that the election of 2020 was a no-brainer. Joe Biden won in a rout. He won by about the same number of votes that George Bush the first beat Michael Dukakis. And if Dukakis had been saying voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud, he would be in some insane asylum right now. But Donald Trump's gotten away with it, and he might very well be president of the United States. That's something that I think is interesting, is the American people have bought into this. Many have, enough that he might win, Mark.
Yeah, this is true. There is he's been able, as has his supporters at Fox and Newsmax and Breitbart, have just repeated this canard over and over again, to where a whole lot of people believe that Joe Biden and the Democrats, you know, flat out stole the election with absolutely no proof whatsoever. And in fact, you know, when they went to court, 80 times or something like that? And they were no court, including ones that were dominated by Trump nominees, ever found even the least amount of validity to these accusations.
And I do watch MSNBC some, and I intentionally watched the last few nights, and I may have missed it, but I didn't hear any stories about Donald Trump now being one of the 500 richest people in the world by virtue of this Truth Social stock rise. The stock offering was a couple of days ago, and on the first day, his net worth shot up by $4 billion, Mark. Is this a great country or what?
it is, and I mean, there are so many... that the country and its system has lifted the largest middle class in history, and I think, you know, that's something that we should all be proud of.
James in Metairie. James, you're on with Mark.
You know, Jim, good morning. I'm wondering if people, these MAGA candidates, when they win, will they put their hands where, you know, to uphold the office on a Trump Bible? That'll just have to wait and see. Latest example of conservative Republican scapegoating people of color, minorities, is the tragic accident in Baltimore with the Key Bridge. A Utah gubernatorial candidate is blaming the collapse of the bridge.
All right, you're fading on us, but Trump is, I understand, selling Bibles that he has signed, but independent of that, can you imagine if some big barge hit the Horace Wilkinson Bridge here in Baton Rouge, what that would do? And by the way, Baton Rouge is a larger port than the port of Baltimore. So I think we have some huge questions about infrastructure in this country, and it's amazing something like this hasn't happened before. You're not far away from that Baltimore Bridge. I'm sure you have been over it, and it went down unbelievably within seconds, Mark.
That was the most remarkable video I've seen ever, because it's getting a lot of coverage. It's pushed out other news stories up here because that is a major bridge. I've been over it many times, and it just went down so quickly. It's unbelievable on it. What also is unbelievable that, you know, there are many bridges in this country, which is why we have an infrastructure law that the Biden administration and many Republicans voted for to kind of upgrade our infrastructure. And I think this just kind of underlines this. But I think the big point that we found is that the police in Baltimore were able to shut off that bridge in a matter of seconds. It could have been a huge thing because they stopped the traffic over both sides of the bridge.
Instantaneously. Yeah, it was remarkable. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Mark.
Yes. With the latest upset of a Republican by a Democrat in a very red Alabama state district, do you sense any reconsideration of GOP politicians on the abortion issue?
It appears that some already are moving away from a hard-edged abortion stance. But, Mark, the question was to you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think we're already seeing that, that there, at least among the more moderate Republicans. You're not going to see that with Mike Johnson. You're not going to see that with the hardliners. But you are seeing more moderate Republicans who are in, you know, suburban districts, and they are moving away from the 15-week nationwide ban. They're trying to come up with a different, now they have not been able to come up with something that the entire caucus can agree on. But we have been seeing the movement away from it.
Trish in Grand Coteau, please be concise. Trish, you're on with Mark.
Good morning. I heard the idea floated that Trump selling Bibles is a way for churches to contribute to his political campaign legally?
Well, I'm sure if there's an angle, Donald Trump will find it. But pastors do this quite often. Sometimes they do it out of the goodness of their hearts.
I would say that the conservative Protestant churches already contribute. I mean, maybe through their pastors. I know that that's true. Through their congregation. I know that that's true. I'm unsure whether, you know, churches themselves would use this as a way to contribute. But he's selling those Bibles at $60 a pop, and most of the money will be going to him and likely will be going to pay for his legal fees. It is a possibility. But, you know, he came up with gym shoes. You know, the man has lots of ideas on how to put money in his pocket, you know, which we can't fault them for, you know.
Isaac in Sherwood. Isaac, you'll be our final caller. Please be brief, Isaac.
Good morning. I was talking about that ship under that bridge. Why wasn't the tugboat hooked to that ship before it got out in that breakwater going that slow? Because you don't have any control over that ship, more or less, because until you get out in the breakwater and get up speed, and then it tugs up. I'm a Navy veteran.
All right. Well, obviously there will be an investigation. Mark, that's...
Yeah. I am not sure I've ever seen a tugboat out there, because the bridge is kind of on the outskirts of the harbor, and what happened to the...
Okay, we do have to roll. But Mark, we'll be calling next week. Thanks for being with us. Until next time, stay safe and stay tuned.